minute for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Our cover story this week, Park It Here, Big Dollars, Bigger Dreams, Squeeze into Dick's Park. And before that, we'll read the biz section and then the reporter pages. The biz section is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Duke professor proposes new name for Braves. A law professor at Duke University is leading a charge to get the Atlanta Braves to change their name and has an interesting twist on the idea. Duke's Chris Buccafusco and his brother Marty grew up in Augusta, Georgia, as huge fans of the Braves, but they began to think about the subject more after a conversation with Paul Lucas, who runs a website called UniWatch. Chris Buccafusco said about two-thirds of native names have changed across professional college and high school sports. Atlanta is kind of pulling up the rear, he said. No one wants to be the last one in the standings. He and his brother are urging the Braves to change the name to Bravest as a nod to honor firefighters, and their suggested logo would have the team changing the tomahawk under the name on the jersey to an axe, which Marty Buccafusco said keeps the traditional feel in place. The brothers have connected with Native American groups, handed out stickers and magnets at Braves games, and Chris Buccafusco has worn his Bravest shirt to Durham Bulls games. Their goal is to keep spreading the word to see if they can get enough energy going to get the team to take the idea seriously. Despite the Braves insisting no changes are planned, Chris Buccafusco isn't deterred. He noted that the NFL's Washington Redskins changing their name is evidence of how quickly that can change. Former owner Dan Snyder would say Washington will never change their name, right up till the day they change their name. Rezoning opens possibilities near Lenovo Center. Could Raleigh's tallest building wind up near the Lenovo Center? Perhaps. On April 15th, the Raleigh City Council approved a rezoning request for the 80 acres surrounding the arena to allow for new hotels, restaurants, apartments, and more. The rezoning allows for a mixed-use development with buildings up to 40 stories. Raleigh's tallest building is the 33-story PNC Plaza. Of course, getting rezoned for 40 stories and actually building it are two different things. Just ask the investors behind the proposed Soleil Center. But the council decision opens up new possibilities. And with the 40-story tower, you wouldn't have to wait in line for the Ferris wheel to get a great view of the state fair. American Airlines to add free Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi has become so ubiquitous that it seems odd to board a plane and not have it. But after some test runs that included flights from Raleigh to Charlotte, American Airlines is adding free Wi-Fi, at least for members of its Advantage program. American said about 90% of its flights will have the service. Brewery Bavana launches a new Fenton location. The next big thing at Fenton and Cary is now open as the surging town continues to add amenities. Brewery Bavana launches its second restaurant April 18th. When the popular restaurant in downtown Raleigh unveils its space in Fenton, the mixed-use destination that's become a popular attraction in Cary. The new space reimagines the Brewery Bavana experience with a lush beer garden twist, the company said. The 2,000-square-foot space provides lots of natural light and features a hand-painted Garden of Eden mural behind the bar. There's enough seating inside for more than 40 guests, plus an expansive patio with an outdoor bar. We're thrilled to bring the spirit of Bavana to Cary, said Patrick Woodson, co-founder and sole owner of Brewery Bavana. The new location lets us celebrate everything people love about our original space while embracing a fresh garden-inspired vision that's unique to Fenton. The Fenton location will be open for lunch and dinner from 11:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday through Thursday and 11:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. Friday and Saturday. RTP's Horseshoe Project adds Cary Pizza Restaurant. The Horseshoe at Hub RTP is adding another popular place to eat. The owners of DeFera Pizza Tavern in downtown Cary, Gregory and Valerie Norton, have signed a lease for 4,000 square feet at the Horseshoe with plans to open by this fall. We felt like the location is a perfect distance from where we are now, Gregory Norton said of the Horseshoe. DeFera's Horseshoe space will have seating for 145, including 90 seats on the patio and a private dining room. Let's turn now to the reporter pages. The first one is Technology and Innovation, and this is brought to us by Lauren Onosorge. Carpe sees retail expansion ahead. That's C-A-R-P-E. 9 months after being acquired by a private equity firm, Carpe, a startup with both Duke University and UNC Chapel Hill roots, is forging toward store shelves despite tariffs, market uncertainty, and hefty competition. Casper Kubica, who founded the company alongside David Spratt while they were students at Duke and UNC, credits the buyout by consumer-focused Topspin as giving the deodorant maker a huge boost, even in uncertain times. "We've kept growing," he said. "Retail is looking like it's happening on the horizon. Its flagship product, a lotion that tackles body sweat, is selling online through Walmart and Amazon." But Kubica said its internal research has found that upwards of 85% of personal care shoppers want to do it in person at a physical store. And that has sometimes given competitors the edge, at least right now. The firm is sizing up the opportunity to change its strategy. Since the acquisition, it's added a chief financial officer and a head of retail who is targeting store shelves. At the same time, adoption of Carpe's underarm product keeps growing. He said so does its new product, a feminine care odor lotion. As geopolitical issues continue to play out, Carpe has an advantage in that its contract manufacturing occurs in the United States. "The recent tariff debacle has put us in a very fortunate position where we're not very affected by the tariffs," he said. "The messaging we immediately put out there to our customers is, we're not raising prices. This is not putting significant price pressure on us." The company, now at about 20 people, launched in 2015 off an initial $100,000 capital infusion from Thundershirt backer Bootstrap Advisors of Durham, growing to hit $22 million in revenue in 2022. Longtime leader at SAS to retire from company. A longtime leader at one of the Triangle's largest privately held companies is retiring after nearly four decades with the Carey Technology Company. David Davis, chief financial officer of SAS Institute, is leaving. A SAS spokesperson confirmed his pending retirement, saying, "SAS is extremely grateful to David for his leadership of the finance organization, including preparation for SAS to operate as a public company." The exit comes at an interesting time for SAS, a $3 billion software company. For years, SAS officials have been saying the company is preparing to go public, ever since CEO Jim Goodnight announced the plan in 2021. The IPO window, however, has not cooperated. RDU, no final plan to develop Lake Crabtree. Raleigh-Durham International Airport is not revealing who's interested in developing part of Lake Crabtree County Park into, quote, an entertainment destination, but at least one developer is eyeing the project. Citing confidentiality, the airport declined to share responses to the request for information, that's RFI, it put out last year, soliciting interest in developing a portion of the park that the airport presently leases to Wake County. However, a county spokesperson said that local officials have been briefed on the developer. The county referred Triangle Business Journal to RDU for more details. A spokesperson for the airport said more information would be released if and when a contract is awarded for the project. In January, a public hearing on RDU's development efforts lasted hours without a single speaker in support of developing the park. No developer spoke at the hearing. Instead, the discussion was dominated by opponents. NC loses battery plant battle to Virginia. A manufacturer of battery components had considered North Carolina for a 2,000-job project. But instead, Microporous, which makes battery separators, in November announced it would invest $1.4 billion in a new manufacturing facility near Danville, Virginia. More than 50 pages of public records released by the North Carolina Department of Commerce at the behest of a public records request show the state had been talking with the company since at least 2023 for what was initially two projects dubbed Big Dipper and Little Dipper. Little Dipper, then a... it's either 156 or 456 job project, part of it was cut off, was considering building in Lee County. Microporous, based in Tennessee, had initially eyed the Triangle Innovation Point megasite in Chatham County for the Big Dipper project, described in documents as a 646 job, $398 million investment. But competition was fierce. The company had received state and local incentives packages for both projects from Virginia in March 2023. When North Carolina officials learned Microporous had taken a, quote, pivot to focus on a combined scenario rather than having two separate projects, the stakes became even higher. But eventually came the announcement that Microporos had picked the Southern Virginia megasite. Kaylee Thompson brings us the real estate and development section. In the Hayes-Barton area of Raleigh, a project is revised. The developers behind a controversial plan to build townhomes in Raleigh's Hayes-Barton neighborhood have pivoted their vision for the site following a court ruling. A development team led by Concept 8 Holdings of Apex has submitted a new subdivision plan for the project. The revised plans come after a Wake County judge last year revoked plans for 17 townhomes on a 2.4-acre lot at 908 Williamson Drive. The ruling gave the developer 6 months to submit a revised preliminary subdivision plan. The fight over the townhomes focused on the lack of transitional protective yards, as the original plan used open space as a buffer. Wake County Superior Court Judge Brian Collins ruled that the new plan would need to follow the Unified Development Ordinance by having a fence or proper buffer in place. The revised plan was submitted in March and approved by the city in April. It still includes 17 townhomes while adding a new driveway wrapping around the homes, a retaining wall connected to a 6.5-foot to 8-foot high screen wall, and a second masonry screen wall along the northern and western edges of the property. A 6-foot wide sidewalk will be constructed for the frontage of the site along Williamson and Iredell Drive. A 20-foot-wide open space will also buffer portions of the property. The three-bedroom townhomes lots will range between 1,702 and 3,311 square feet. The townhomes would replace a single-family home on the lot. The ruling gave us direct instructions of how to fix our plan, said real estate developer Johnny Chappell with Concept 8 Holdings. We adjusted our plan, we met with some of the neighbors in Hayes-Barton, and we showed them our revised plan and how we had adjusted it to Judge Collins's order and asked for their feedback. The project is now in the 30-day appeal period. Holly Springs to add mixed-use project for 55-plus. A new age-restricted community is coming to Holly Springs. The Holly Springs Town Council has approved a request for EPCON Communities to rezone nearly 40 acres for residential mixed use near the shops at Holly Springs Retail Center. The former zoning was rural residential. The new zoning allows the Ohio-based developer to build 107 single-family homes and townhomes along Avant Ferry Road. Named the Courtyards at Holly Grove, the homes will be age-restricted, where at least one member of the household must be 55 or older. 24 units will be townhomes, while 83 will be single-family homes. All of the main living, including the primary bedroom, will be on the first floor. The bedroom range will be between 2.5 to 3.5, and some will be bonus rooms. All of the residences will be for sale, but the company did not disclose an estimated price range. EPCON's townhomes typically start in the high 400,000s. Venture makes first real estate deal in Raleigh. A young Raleigh firm has made its first purchase in Raleigh, an apartment complex on Centennial Campus. Arboretum Partners, formed in 2022 by two former Blue Heron asset management veterans, acquired the Greens at Centennial Campus apartments near Lake Raleigh. The transaction was only for the building, as the land is owned by the state of North Carolina. The apartments have an occupancy rate of 93%, according to the website. Deed records do not reflect a sale price for the apartments, and Arboretum representatives declined to provide it. However, the LLC associated with Arboretum acquired a loan in the amount of $39.6 million, according to Wake County records. Dillwig sells Raleigh warehouse for $5.6 million. Commercial real estate firm Dillwig has sold its only industrial buildings to capitalize on the region's thriving industrial market. The Durham company sold its Timberlake warehouse at 2539 Noblin Road in Northeast Raleigh, just outside the Beltline, for $5.57 million, according to Wake County deed records. The building is 100% leased with a weighted average lease term of 5 years. It brings in $630,000 a year in net operating income. The buyer was Ed Finley of DF Properties. Finley said there are no plans to make any changes to the building. The Triangle's industrial vacancy rate in fourth quarter 2024 was 7.62%, according to Triangle's Business Journal's Space publication. While Dillwig has sold some underperforming office properties and has a Durham Tower on the market, this sale was a positive for the company, CEO Anthony Dillwig said. and ended up being a tremendous win for Delwig and our investors, especially as commercial real estate entrepreneurs, investors, and operators continue to navigate economic uncertainties and mercurial capital markets, he said. The Timberlake warehouse has 63,304 square feet of warehouse space. The healthcare and education section of the TBJ is written by Zach Ezone. Visa purge hits Triangle students. As the Trump administration terminates visas for foreign students at universities across the country, schools in the Triangle could be dealt a financial blow if the numbers grow. Already, visas for a small number of foreign students attending Duke University, UNC Chapel Hill, and NC State University have been revoked, according to reports. Reports have also said that visas for students at UNC Charlotte and Appalachian State University have been canceled. Between 2021 and 2024, the number of international students at North Carolina universities ranged from 18,587 to 24,468. During that span, the state ranked between number 14 and number 16 among the states with the most international students, according to federal data published by the Institute of International Education. Three of the top five institutions in the state with the most international students are in the Triangle. The leading North Carolina universities for international students in 2024 were Duke University and Medical Center with 5,949, NC State with 5,475, UNC Charlotte, 3,393, UNC Chapel Hill, 3,153, and Wake Forest with 1,041. NC State's Office of International Services said the university learned on March 25th that records of two international students had been terminated by the administration. NC State was not directly notified of the moves. UNC said the school was not directly notified when the federal government terminated the Student Exchange and Visitor Program records of six international students and/or alumni. The federal government also has terminated the visas of two international students and one alumnus at Duke University. Durham nonprofit slashes 483 U.S. jobs. A global nonprofit headquartered in Durham is laying off hundreds of workers amid cuts to its federal funding. FHI 360 is reducing its U.S. workforce by 483 employees, including 144 workers in North Carolina. Globally, the organization is cutting more than 700 jobs in response to the U.S. government terminating federally funded projects. The layoffs are effective May 2nd and come after FHI furloughed hundreds of employees in response to the Trump administration's freezing funds. As of mid-March, it had furloughed 45% of its U.S. workforce, including more than 150 people in North Carolina. Having to part ways with so many talented staff who have dedicated themselves to advancing FHI 360's mission is incredibly painful, CEO Tessie San Martin said. In March, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said the government would cancel 83% of U.S. agency for international development programs. As of last year, FHI had 4,600 employees, with 450 based in the Triangle, according to Triangle Business Journal research. FHI 360 and its subsidiaries had revenue of about $870 million for the fiscal year that ended in September 2023. About 67% of the revenue came from USAID, according to FHI 360's annual report for 2024. California firm moving HQ to Research Triangle. The Triangle has gained another public company through a headquarters relocation. Simulations Plus has moved its headquarters from Southern California to Research Triangle Park. The company provides software and consulting services in the biopharmaceutical sector. The move comes as Simulations also exits four office locations in California, New York, Pennsylvania, and Raleigh. The relocations are in support of the company's remote work culture and plan to reduce excess office space to achieve its carbon footprint reduction targets, according to the company's latest financial filing. Simulations lists 800 Park Offices Drive, Suite 401 and RTP as its executive offices. Simulations reported revenue for the six-month period that ended in February of $41.36 million, up from $32.81 million from the same six-month period last year. The company expects total revenue in fiscal year 2025 between $90 million and $93 million. UNC prepares to stash $50 million to be ready for cuts. UNC Chapel Hill is looking to reduce costs amid uncertainty. The Board of Trustees in March approved a budget that requires the school to set aside $50 million to cover potential reductions in federal funding. This comes as many universities are experiencing and preparing for cuts in federal funding. This sequestration represents about 4% of the operations budget. The board approved a total budget for fiscal year 2026 of $4.52 billion, including $1.17 billion in general fund revenues. The university's fiscal year 2025 budget totaled $4.24 billion, including $1.11 billion in general fund revenues. The primary difference between the two budgets is a more than $200 million increase in revenues from auxiliary and other trust funds. Ben Tobin is the reporter who writes about the Greater Triangle area. In Johnston County, IHRA tells Benson, start your engines. A racetrack in Johnston County has sold for millions to a drag racing organization. The International Hot Rod Association, that's IHRA, announced that it has purchased the Gallet Motorsports Park at 555 Drag Strip Road in Benson. An LLC owned by Daryl Cuttle, who also owns the Fairfield, Ohio-based IHRA, purchased the more than 100-acre site for around $10 million at the end of last month, according to Johnston County deed records. Representatives of the IHRA did not respond to requests seeking comment. Gallet Motorsports Park, formerly known as the Dunn-Benson Dragway, has a 9,000-seat grandstand for racing, truck, and concert events, as well as on-site restaurant. The original sporting venue opened in 1957. We're excited to announce we have acquired this first-class racing facility, IHRA CEO Christian Bird said in the release. It's both racer and spectator-friendly track and has proven to be a great host of special events. We look forward to adding more great events to the schedule. The IHRA is hosting a Night of Fire event at the Motorsports Park on June 27th and June 28th. The IHRA lists three other partner tracks in North Carolina, including Roxboro Motorsports Park. The other two are in Roland near Lumberton and Shelby west of Charlotte. According to industry website DragZine, the purchase is one of seven the IHRA is making as part of a big investment in the sport in 2025. It also bought the Darlington Dragway in Darlington, South Carolina. The purchase comes as southern Johnston County grows steadily. Benson's most recent population estimate sits at around 4,400, according to the latest data from the U.S. Census Bureau. The county's population is racing toward 250,000, up from around 170,000 in 2010. In Chatham County, a project with Disney theme makes land deal. The developer attached to a Disney-themed community in a booming North Carolina county recently paid eight figures for land there, with the project expected to break ground this year. DMB/SWVP Raleigh, an LLC tied to DMB Development of Arizona, and Stanley Living at CP, an LLC tied to Disney, purchased a combined 242 acres along the Haw River in Pittsburgh for more than $23.3 million last month, according to Chatham County deed records. The price comes to more than $107,000 an acre. The land sits in Chatham Park, and the seller is tied to Chatham Park developers Preston Development of Cary. DMB Development is the company working with Story Living by Disney. Disney's real estate arm on Asteria, a community set to span across 1,500 acres and include more than 4,000 residential units with a mix of multifamily and single-family homes. The Walt Disney Company sent shockwaves through the Triangle when it announced in December 2023 that Story Living had selected Chatham Park for its second Disney-themed community. Mary Alexander, Executive Vice President and General Counsel of DMB Development, said that a 25-acre tract will hold the future amenity site for the project. In Granville County, Tractor Supply Store trades for millions. A West Coast-based real estate investment firm paid millions to acquire a big-box store in a relatively untapped county north of Durham. An LLC tied to Realty Income, based out of San Diego, paid a little more than $4.7 million last month to acquire a Tractor Supply Co. store at 2521 East Lyon Station Road in Creedmoor, according to Granville County deed records. The store sits on roughly 11 acres and was previously owned by Charlotte-based real estate group Paxton Properties. Representatives of Realty Income did not respond to requests seeking comment. Realty Income isn't a stranger to making investments in the state. In January, the company purchased a Hobby Lobby store in Jacksonville for $8.3 million. And in Person County, no word yet if Microsoft delays will hit Triangle. Microsoft is pulling back on a $1 billion data center it plans for Western North Carolina. A Microsoft spokesperson said April 9th that while the company intends to move forward in Catawba County, it has pushed back the timeline for some of the work. The company was not specific about a new timeline. Microsoft is also pausing plans for a data center in Ohio. Microsoft declined to comment about its plans for Person County, where it purchased a 1,350-acre megasite for close to $27 million last year. It hasn't revealed its plans for the huge site, but signs point to another data center complex. Microsoft has other operations in North Carolina, including in Morrisville. As of its latest update to the state back in 2022, the company had more than 2,500 full-time employees in North Carolina. Microsoft had initially planned to bring 500 jobs to its Morrisville operation by 2027, but pulled out of the incentive deal. The retail and restaurant section is here, and that is written by Kate Tracy. A distillery in Garner closes after it fails to pay rent and gets locked out. Uphill climb, too much to overcome. A distillery in Garner has closed after the owner fell behind on rent amid bankruptcy proceedings. The owner of Aristotle Spirits, located at 105 Rand Mill Road in Garner, said he's unable to operate his business after his landlord, Raleigh real estate firm City Plat, locked him out of the building last month. Jake Howland, who opened Aristotle in 2021, said he's still hoping for a miracle investment to resurrect the business. Howland said he has not paid rent, which is $7,500 per month, in the last 7 months. City Plat principal Vincenzo Verdino confirmed the rent default, adding that Aristotle had a significant outstanding balance prior to the past 7 months. Unfortunately, we just couldn't keep up with the payments, Howland said. He said City Plat did what it had to do, and he has no hard feelings against the property owner. In 2023, Howland filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Documents show he had $530,421 Small Business Association loan through Dogwood State Bank with a variable interest rate. The distillery was able to stay open through the bankruptcy. By last fall, Howland's attorney had filed a motion for final decree to exit bankruptcy. But Howland said revenue has decreased over the past 6 months, attributing that to people making decisions not to go out as much, among other factors. Selling liquor in North Carolina is an uphill climb in and of itself, just with the regulatory climate, Howland said. Howland's bank lender has now taken control of the property, according to Verdino. I'm very grateful to the customers we've had. I can't say enough about what we've done over the years, Howland said. It's just too many factors working against us. In Durham, coffee business to add first storefront. After establishing itself through a mobile coffee trailer and two carts, a coffee brand has picked downtown Durham for its first brick-and-mortar space. Narrative Coffee Company plans to open a coffee shop at 300 Morris Street in the Durham Innovation District this summer. 321 Coffee formerly occupied 300 Morris Street, but exited downtown last summer. Narrative owner Rod Lawson liked the idea of bringing coffee to his hometown. Lawson said, I just thought it made sense for me to come back to where I grew up and bring my business here, just to get back into the community and everything, since Durham has grown so much since the last time I left. Lawson's career has included stints in marketing, banking, and sales, but he always wanted to own his own business. One day at an airport, he found himself reading a book about coffee. I wasn't really super into coffee originally at the time of getting this book, but something clicked, he said. He started frequenting coffee shops and in 2022 decided to pursue the idea of Narrative. Narrative frequently visits North Hills, Raleigh Ironworks, and other locations. Last year, Narrative's revenue from its mobile gigs was $250,000. Narrative's rent is approximately $2,000 a month. Cary Brewery files for bankruptcy. Cotton House Craft Brewers, a six-year-old brewery based at 307 South Academy Street, has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy but will remain open. The company lists $100,001 to $500,000 in assets and between $1,001,000 and $10,000,000 in liabilities in its bankruptcy filing. Founder Brent Webb said the brewery is going to go through this and come out through the other side. Webb said the company's restaurant, Salt, in McGregor Village was the catalyst for the problems. The restaurant and catering business closed. Creditors include the U.S. Small Business Administration for a total of $400,000, First Bank for a total of $133,000, and the North Carolina Department of Revenue for $179,000. Tariffs threaten the craft beer scene as prices rise. Sean Wilson is dreading an email he needs to write. The owner of Full Steam Brewery in Durham needs to bid out the construction of his upcoming tap room at the American Tobacco campus. He knows the pricing is going to be high given the rising cost of construction materials and tariffs that could impact the costs of aluminum and steel. It ain't easy right now being a small business owner, he said. Sumit Vohra, CEO of Lone Rider Brewing Company in Raleigh, said the prices for aluminum and grain could rise 20% this year. He estimates that four-packs and six-pack prices will go up by a dollar. And trust us, that's not covering the new cost, Boris said. Les Stewart, co-owner at Raleigh's Trophy Brewing Company, added, "One thing we know that we will see is increases associated with this because our aluminum does come through Canada." The final reporter page is On the Coast, written by Dane Huffman. In Atlantic Beach, Beach Club unveils swank new look. A beloved club in Atlantic Beach has a swank new look just in time for the summer. In December 2023, the Coral Bay Club demolished a facility that dated to 1958, setting in motion a race to finish a new 45,000-square-foot facility by this summer. "We have moved heaven and earth, especially in this environment," said Alan Gant, the chairman of Burlington's Glen Raven Company and the chair of the club's building committee. "It's been nothing but incredible." The club has about 625 members and a heavy presence from the Triangle. The old building was a one-story structure with repair costs that Gant said could cost hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. This was a big cost for a club that reported revenue of $3.64 million for fiscal 2022, according to its Form 990 filing. The clubhouse, which cost roughly $20 million to build, has an impressive presence on Fort Macon Road, now rising two stories and featuring sweeping views of the ocean. "You can see the beach as it curves around," Gant said. "The view is just unbelievable." The new building includes a new bar called 1958, informal dining, a ballroom with a vaulted ceiling as opposed to the low ceiling from the past, and significantly a kitchen in the middle that can service multiple parts of the operation. The new layout means the club can support parties and events that don't disrupt the regular services for members. A grand opening is scheduled for Memorial Day weekend. Gant praised general contractor Samet Corp. of Wilmington, as well as government entities and others, for working so diligently on the project. He also noted that the overall feel will be far more upscale with murals and classy touches. "It's not going to be sterile," he said. "When you walk in, you will go, oh my goodness." Figure 8 home leads 2024 Wilmington sales. A stunning Figure 8 Island home that sold for $13.9 million was the most expensive home sale in the Wilmington market for 2024, according to a recent report by the Wilmington Business Journal. The home at 102 Beach Road South is more than 6,700 square feet and features 5 bedrooms and 8 baths. The sale closed July 3rd. The buyer is Herbert A. Allen III, president of Allen & Company in New York City. While the sale led the market, there were 7 other homes that sold for more than $7 million, a whopping total that represents the wealth flowing to the coast. Of the 8, 4 were on Figure 8, including another home for $11.9 million. New Jersey invests in Brunswick County. A New Jersey company has made a major investment in a facility in Brunswick County and is looking for more. Akron Pharma purchased a 48,000-square-foot warehouse at 2080 Enterprise Drive Northeast in Leland for $4.2 million earlier this year, according to deed records. The seller, ITI Technologies, purchased it in 2020 for $2.5 million. Vinnie Reddy, vice president of global operations, said Akron specializes in delivering affordable, over-the-counter medications through major U.S. distributors such as McKesson, AmerisourceBergen, and Cardinal Health. NC ports to be impacted by the China trade war. As the U.S. trade war with China escalates, the Trump administration's plan to hit back at Chinese-built cargo ships may have a big impact on North Carolina's ports. The administration plans to impose steep port fees on Chinese-built vessels, a move that could have container operators cutting their calls to smaller U.S. ports such as Wilmington and Morehead City. According to the Wall Street Journal, the latest plan is to base fees on vessel capacity, meaning lower fees for smaller ships. The $110 billion North Carolina agribusiness industry moves $7.3 billion through the state's ports, everything from equipment to fertilizers. Rob Handfield, professor of supply chain management at NC State University, said, "With all these tariffs, the global economy is really, really going to suffer. And as those tariffs go up, it's going to impact imports and exports. It's not a good thing." Handfield describes the situation as chaotic and notes that it's not clear how permanent any of the recent trade decisions really are. Brian Clark, executive director for the North Carolina Port, declined to comment. But in a letter he wrote March 14th to Jamison Greer, U.S. trade representatives, he said the policy could endanger mid-sized ports like those in North Carolina. And now for something completely different, the cover story. Big dollars, bigger dreams squeeze into Dix Park. A new park draws investment, but land is hard to get. And the writer of the cover story this week is Kaylee Thompson. David Meeker and his partnership group were the first ones to see the potential of the area surrounding Dorothy Dix Park when they decided to build a larger brewing operation there. The Trophy Brewing and Tap Room opened in 2015 and was one of the first developments installed across from the park. First and foremost, we needed a warehouse space, and that neighborhood has traditionally been a warehouse district. And we did see the future of Dix Park and opportunity with the tap room there as an upside down the road, Meeker said. I won't say it's been the easiest place to have a tap room down there. There's not a ton of walk-in traffic right now. We do big events on weekends to get people there, but it's hard day-to-day, especially on weekdays. We're really excited about Dix Park coming in, and I feel like people in Raleigh don't really know how big of a deal the playground is going to be over there. In many ways, the $72 million Gibson Park Play Plaza, set to open late spring, is a watershed moment. The play park will include climbing towers, a playground, a picnic grove, a waterfall, and more, with the entrance to its 18.5 acres on Lake Wheeler Road. Overall, the park had 618,000 visitors between July 2023 and June 2024, according to the City of Raleigh's Department of Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Resources. The city is projecting the addition of the plaza will translate to more than 1 million visitors a year. It's a seminal moment for the park, which the City of Raleigh purchased from the state in 2015. The park has already evolved into a place where visitors marvel at sunflowers and unleashed dogs, but the promise of its full potential, an urban park modeled after famous parks in New York and Chicago, has developers scrambling for space. And that's the challenge, as developers have had to squeeze projects into the land that's available. Dix Park has the NC State University main campus on one side, Centennial Campus on another, and the NC State Farmers Market on another side. And with single-family home neighborhoods scattered throughout, open space is scarce. Projects are rising nonetheless, as investment in residential development surrounding the park could reach nearly $2 billion. SLI Capital, led by Brian Kane, will open the first apartments in the $700 million development called The Weld in the third quarter of this year. The Weld's first phase will have 9,500 square feet of ground floor retail and 675 apartments in two 20-story towers. Nearby is Kane Realty's Rockway Raleigh, a multi-phase project that includes residences plus retail and flex space. There's obviously major barriers on a bunch of sides there. You've got Western Boulevard and then Centennial Campus and then the Farmers Market. So you only have a pretty limited area, and it's going to be very pocketed, SLI Capital's Kane said. So you'll see a concentration where we are. And then as you head back down Lake Wheeler Road toward the Farmers Market, you have a big chunk of land in there across from the Farmers Market north of Maywood Avenue that's been rezoned. That area, you'll eventually see another pocket, but that'll take some time. While Dix Park is close to downtown, it's still a bit of a hike, especially because the conditions between the two locations don't lend to a safe or easy walk right now. The City of Raleigh is planning improvements in Lake Wheeler Road to make it safer and more accessible. It does feel disconnected from downtown, especially from a walkability or biking standpoint, Meeker said. Lake Wheeler and South Saunders aren't the safest roads, although at some point they'll do the Lake Wheeler road work, and that includes a huge greenway all the way from downtown. Despite these obstacles, development on the eastern edge of the park is booming, and that development is drawing in even more interest. Several properties around Dix Park have been rezoned for more height and flexibility in uses. In 2023, a collection of 46 parcels between Lake Wheeler Road and McDowell Street were approved for a commercial mixed use up to 20 stories. While not all the parcels are connected, they do include Trophy Brewing and Tap Room and Baker Roofing Company, totaling 31.29 acres. The zoning allows for up to 3,000 residential units, 500 hotel rooms, 200,000 square feet of retail, and 1.5 million square feet of office space. No site plans have been filed for any of the parcels yet, but in 2024, another couple of parcels nearby on South Saunders Street went next to Highway 401 were approved for commercial mixed use of up to 12 stories. Those properties currently have auto-related businesses on site but could be developed into a mixed-use project, helping transition into the taller heights in the likes of The Weld. Coming in at 20 stories, The Weld will be a three-tower development sitting across from the Oak Room Picnic Shelter and planned Hammock Grove to be completed in 2027. The idea came about in 2020, and a rezoning was pursued in 2021. The first two residential towers are almost complete, Tower 1 opening this summer and Tower 2 welcoming tenants in early 2026. The third tower is in the design phase and may break ground by the beginnings of 2026. The plan for the third tower includes 20,000 square feet of retail, 525 apartments, an elevated swimming pool, sky lobby, rooftop terrace, and sky lounges. The park really is the catalyst, Kane said. It's unique to have such a big destination park, and it's not really replaceable. So the idea that you could do something that bridges or starts to bridge downtown in the park, that was really probably the most compelling element of it for us. We really knew that there could be some real sense of place and density created there and be both the front door to the park and the bridge to downtown. Focused on continuing offering outdoor amenities, the buildings will surround a central plaza designed as a community gathering place. The restaurants and retail will face the central plaza. In addition, The Weld will coordinate with Kane Realty's Rockway Raleigh development to provide connectivity between each project's outdoor spaces. Rockway is positioned right along the Rocky Branch Trail. Rockway Raleigh will also have three buildings, each focused on adding more residences to the area. Freshly opened with a 35% occupancy rate, The Row is a seven-story mixed-use building. It has 335 apartments, 18,000 square feet of retail and flex office space, and a rooftop terrace with views of downtown. BK Pilates and Benchwarmers Bagels are two retailers who have signed on for space on the ground floor of The Row. The next two buildings in Rockaway will be the six-story The Heath and Lind Hill Lofts, offering a total of 550 units and 5,000 square feet of retail space. Construction on The Heath is anticipated to start later this year. Drawing on inspiration from Dick's Park, Kane Realty has a vision of making Rockaway Raleigh a destination. Josie Reeves, Director of Design with Kane Realty, previously told Triangle Business Journal, "We have taken great care to design interesting storefronts and to create massive amounts of outdoor dining along both South Saunders Street and directly on the Rocky Branch Creek Greenway Trail using raised patios, creating the opportunity for Rockaway retail tenants to be a true destination on the Greenway," she said. Kane Realty isn't the only developer inspired by the growth of Dick's Park. Meeker has plans to upgrade the Trophy Brewing space, especially since thousands of people will be moving into the apartments over the next few years. The plan includes more seating, significant more shady areas for people to hang out in after a day at the park, and more activities for students when they're on campus. "The moment the playground opens is going to be a game changer for our business, in a good way," Meeker said. "I think it's going to be bigger than downtown Cary Park. It's less connected to downtown. It's further away. So it may not be as good for downtown, but for our businesses that are right there, I think it will have a bigger impact." To be on the same level of those urban activated parks, Dick's Park is in the process of its 10-year implementation of the master plan that will transform the historic land and buildings. Along with that, the city is searching for a way to make better and safer connection to the park from downtown. That includes the road improvements to Lake Wheeler. The city will provide a complete street, which provides safe avenues for all modes of transportation from Lake Wheeler Road east to Maywood Avenue between the railroad and Good Street and ends at South Saunders Street. Construction is set to start late spring 2025 as the Raleigh City Council voted to approve the construction bid to Reifenberg, North Carolina, in the amount of $21.8 million. The most current project inside the park is the anticipated opening of the Gibson Play Plaza. The Conservancy contributed $26.5 million with a $10 million lead gift coming from Pat and Tom Gibson. The city's Pierce said city funding also included $35 million from Parks Bond in 2022 and $12 million from the city budget. Coming soon at Dick's Park will be the opening the grab-and-go market in the House of Many Porches, the demolition of office buildings that the Department of Health and Human Services continue to vacate, the famous troll sculptures, and restoration of Rocky Branch Creek. The Dick's Park Conservancy will invest $80 million, $74.5 million of which has already been fundraised, into the joint development with the city. The Conservancy has already invested $65 million. The city did not provide an amount of how much it has invested to date. We're trying to complete the eastern edge of the park with Rocky Branch, the Grove, and Play Plaza, said Kate Pierce, executive director of Dick's Park, with the city. The Lake Wheeler Road project is getting underway, so reconstruction and improvements to Lake Wheeler Road will be happening soon. So you're going to see the entire edge of the park really change, and that's super exciting. It creates this amazing gateway from Interstate 40 to downtown, so we're speaking both to local residents and to visitors. The Gibson Play Plaza marks the start of transformation of Dick's Park. We're creating this world-class destination right in the heart of Raleigh. Some of the investment has gone towards projects like the Flowers Cottage Uplift, House of Many Porches Upfit, Historic Stone Houses Restoration and Renovation, the Sunflower Power Poles along Lake Wheeler, and several art installations. The Conservancy has plans to provide a concession stand at Flowers Cottage and two at either end of Gibson Play Plaza. Part of the initiative to provide food and beverage throughout the park is from the realization that if you're enjoying the park and want food, they have to leave and come back. All of the buildings on the west side of the railroad tracks will be abated and demolished. Most of the office buildings on the east side will be demolished, while others, if they are in the right condition, will be restored and renovated. Once all of the state staff are moved out of the office buildings by January 2027, the park will become under full control of the city, with an estimated annual operating cost between $14 million and $18 million. The future of the main Dorothea Dix Hospital has not been determined yet by the city and Conservancy. Ruffin Hall, CEO of the Conservancy, said the city and Conservancy want to receive community input and feedback to figure out the best path forward, since so much history and heartache is attached to the building. That could be demolition, restoration, or adaptive reuse. Everyone wants to talk about the potential reuse of the hospital site. I think that's a very large community question. There's lots of pros and cons on what particular use for that site. There are a lot of really good ideas, Hall said. It needs to go through a process where we can also recognize the history, the sensitivity of the patients that were there, the sensitivity to the staff that was there. There's history in the park associated with it being a former plantation. There's a cemetery with some unmarked graves. So we need to make sure that we respect the history and the legacy of the site with the opportunities into the future. This week's TBJ has a section entitled A Better World, and we'll read that now. Four Chapel Hill homes rise in 10 days. The Habitat for Humanity of Orange County launched an ambitious plan March 18th to construct four homes in just 10 days as a variety of stakeholders worked together in the lightning-fast project in Chapel Hill. The Home Builders Blitz condensed the normal schedule to speed up the process, helped by Build Sense, Trinity Design and Build, and Bossed Custom Homes. The four homes rose in the Weaver's Grove neighborhood. The Home Builders Association of Durham, Orange, and Chatham Counties has partnered for years with our local Habitat affiliates through Home Builders Blitz, said Holly Fracaro, CEO of the Home Builders Association of Durham, Orange, and Chatham Counties. Community is what it's all about. The effort is a response to the rising cost of homes in the area and the challenges for people finding affordable homes in places such as Orange County, where home costs have steadily risen. Jesus Gutierrez, project manager for Habitat for Humanity of Orange County, said, with donations from our build partners and vendors, we're saving at least 50% of our costs to build these homes, as well as getting ahead of our construction schedule. Families who have been waiting for over a year will become homeowners in a matter of days. More than 50 vendors contributed to the building of the homes. Weaver's Grove is a mixed-income community that includes market-rate homes as well as those from Habitat for Humanity. The community has roughly 240 homes, and approximately 100 come from Habitat projects. In Johnston County, artists work with children at Boys and Girls Clubs. Local artist Priscilla Williams recently held a series of art sessions for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Johnston County at their Smithfield and Selma locations. The sessions allow children to explore women's history through art while learning to express their creativity and identity through painting. Williams guided each participant to explore color, texture, and imagination in a supportive and inspiring environment. "Our members were engaged, focused, and proud of their work," said Lynn Stanley of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Johnston County. "We're grateful to Priscilla Williams for sharing her passion and creativity with our youth." The effort was supported by grassroots grants from the Johnston County Arts Council and the North Carolina Arts Council, the club said in a news release about the event. Interfaith Food Shuttle gets two new trucks. The Interfaith Food Shuttle of Raleigh has a pair of new refrigerated trucks thanks to the Publix Supermarkets charities. Grant funding enabled the food shuttle to buy two 16-foot refrigerated trucks with lift gates, the nonprofit said, so it can transport perishable foods. "We are beyond grateful to Publix Supermarkets charities for their incredible generosity and partnership," said Paige Watts, grants manager for Interfaith Food Shuttle. Activate Good event highlights corporate impact. Activate Good is holding a summit May 14th that looks at corporate responsibility as far as into a growth, employee retention, and cultural impact. The Triangle Businesses for Good Summit will have a variety of panels, with Philip Freeman of Murphy's Natural serving as the keynote speaker. The event begins at 8:30 a.m. and runs to 12:30 p.m. at Raleigh Founded, which is at 509 West North Street. Panelists include leaders from Lenovo, Microsoft, Smith Anderson, and many more. Goodwill looks to address food insecurity. Goodwill Industries of Eastern North Carolina has launched the Rotary Service Challenge to address food insecurity. The Rotary Club of Goodwill has provided $2,250 in food vouchers to 48 Rotary clubs within Rotary District 7710. The vouchers encourage Rotarians to unite in making an immediate impact while also raising awareness of the reality of food insecurity in our communities. This week's executive voice section features Chris Ehrenfeld. Chris Ehrenfeld did not picture himself becoming the owner of an integrated real estate company when he graduated from UNC Chapel Hill in 1997. Ehrenfeld, a Pittsburgh native, grew up with a deep passion for construction and started in the industry by framing homes for other builders. Eventually, he started building homes for clients through his own company, Bold Construction. And from there, Ehrenfeld created subsequent residential real estate, commercial real estate, and development companies, as well as a charitable foundation. Now, Ehrenfeld is the owner of Bold Companies, mainly focusing on real estate in Chatham and Orange counties. "I would love to say that I had this master plan that one day I would have a construction company and a residential brokerage and a development company," Ehrenfeld said. "But that would be a lie. It just sort of happened by chance. But now that we have it, it just makes a lot of sense. Our specialty isn't strictly construction or real estate development. Rather, our specialty is knowing this market inside and out." What launched your passion for construction? "Growing up, my family was always into doing projects around the house. We didn't have a ton of money growing up, but my dad took a ton of pride in home ownership and doing improvement projects." Did you imagine staying in North Carolina after UNC? "I grew up in Pittsburgh and I loved it there, but I didn't really know anything different. And then when I came here and saw the differences from a climate perspective and a growth perspective, everything here was new and growing and expanding, and Pittsburgh at the time especially was sort of transitioning. All the young people were leaving Pittsburgh for other opportunities. So when I came down here, the stark contrast of the growth and the energy was just a vast difference from the Pittsburgh and once I was here. I figured out this is probably where I was going to stay." What are the biggest changes you've noticed in Chatham County? "We were really the first ones here in North Chatham, and tried to establish ourselves here, but it's just grown so much over the years. back in the early 2000s, if you had a Pittsburgh address real estate-wise, a house was going to sell for significantly less than if it had a Chapel Hill address. And so when Briar Chapel opened in 2008, they were fortunate enough that they were able to get a Chapel Hill address. That was a huge feather in their cap because everybody was like, if this thing has a Pittsburgh address, it's never going to get going. For the last 5 years, Pittsburgh address stuff is selling like hotcakes and actually at a premium. Chatham County median average home prices are actually higher than Chapel Hill. So it's really flip-flopped. It went from an area that was sort of rural and not very desirable from a real estate perspective to being incredibly desirable and being now where everybody wants to live. What is driving Pittsburgh's growth? Certainly Chatham Park is just a transformational project, but the other thing is COVID. The big push coming out of COVID was people wanted more land and more privacy, and Chatham County has historically had homes on larger pieces of land. And we saw communities that before COVID would sell sporadically, that during COVID and the 24 months after COVID were selling at unbelievable rates. That demand continues to come today. And Mr. Ehrenfeld is 48 years old, married with two children, and as he said, his hometown is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Fast-growing British firm opens Durham office. A life sciences company based in England is establishing operations in Durham to support its growth. Genomics in April set up office space on Mangum Street. It already has a strong U.S. client base and an office in Boston. Genomics has around 30 employees in the U.S. with about 20 based in the Triangle. We were keen to give them a physical presence to come to, and we've hired some other folks in the U.S. who are now in process of relocating, said Gerald Dunstan, Vice President of Life Sciences at Genomics. The Sunday Times of London identified Genomics earlier this year as one of Britain's fastest-growing private tech companies, with annual sales growth over 3 years of nearly 33%. The company uses genetic and genomic data to advance different areas of healthcare. Genomics supports life sciences companies through both the drug discovery and clinical development processes. And that is that. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.